We're holding on Sadiq Ahmed Bey's 14 lines from the bottom. So continuing on the topic of hoarding produce, where that can cause inflation, we said, Omar Rav, oysa adam is kabe oitzer, a person is allowed to make his kav, meaning the small amount, or whatever it is that his field produces, and make an oitzer, make a storehouse out of that, in order to have a reserve for himself and his family for later. The issue is to buy from the marketplace to do that, to try to corner the market, or at least some part of it, not just to provide a store for himself and his family. Similarly in Braisa, in Otsin Peiris, Dvorim Shiyeshba and Chaya Nefesh, we're not allowed to store away produce in Otsin, there are Rishonim, where the Girsa, the Eretz Yisrael, and even according to the Rishonim point out, doesn't mean specifically in Eretz Yisrael, means any place that's majority Jewish. So you're not allowed to store away Peiris, Dvorim Shiyeshba and Chaya Nefesh, things that are necessary for life. For example, wine, oil, and flour, which are basic staples. Aval tavlin, kamen, or purple and mutter, but you would be allowed to with spices of various kinds, for example, cumin or pepper, because those aren't so essential. If the price goes up because people are hoarding it, then that's not so bad. Those are not basic necessities. Furthermore, when does all that apply? Only when he's buying from the market. And then he's going to end up that now there's less available in the market and prices are going to go up because he's storing it away. But if he brings in his own produce from his field and wants to store it away, then such a thing would be mutter. Which again bears out what Rav had said, that you're allowed to do that with your own produce. And the Braisa continues, Umutu la'odim, let's a peiris, ve'eretz Yisrael, gimel shonin. Now, a person would be allowed to store produce in Eretz Yisrael for three particular years. Namely, Erev Shvius, or Shvius, and Matzoi Shvius. You can store up for the year before Shemitah, because then he has to store up in preparation for that there's going to be less produce available during Shemitah, and Shemitah itself, and Metzoi Shviyas, because as we find in the Psukim and Parshas Bahar, it takes time until the crops from the eighth year are ready. You plant them at the beginning of the year, you plow and plant at the beginning of the year, but they're not actually ready until about the end of the year, when because they stay drying out in the field the whole summer. So therefore, before Shemitah, you're allowed to store up. This way you have food for Shemitah itself, and also you have some available to sell during Shemitah to earn some money for your family. So in that case, you're allowed to do. And in fact, the Gemara gives an example. And then the Braisa finishes off, however, over Shnei Batsurdis, however, in years of famine, in years of drought, I feel a kav charuvin lo yetzer. Then a person has to be more careful about hoarding produce, even a kav of carobs, which is only a small amount, and carobs are not one of those things which are yesh behen chaya nefesh. They're not such they're not something which is so essential to life. So then lo yetzer, he still shouldn't store up even that, because he causes a curse in the prices, meaning at a time like that, when there's a drought, everything is going to be higher in price anyhow, because there are shortages, and therefore if he stores amount, so he can store for himself as much as he needs, for as much as he figures that he's going to need for the year. But to go and store up in order to be able to sell later, that he can't do, because that would cause inflation, and you want to avoid that. Mefoshim talk about that the issur is primarily on things that yesh behem chaya nefesh, things that are necessary for life. So when we're mentioning kav charuvin over here, so charuvin are not usually necessary for life, but on the other hand, during periods of drought, that might be what people mainly live off. Or we find in a number of places in the Gemara that charuvin were the typical kind of food that people would eat, that people would eat when there were shortages or when there were other things for example, Reb Shimon ben Yechoy and Reb Elazar in the cave, and Reb Chanina ben Dosa would live off a calf. He and his family would live off a calf of carobs from week to week. So when there are shortages, then carobs are also dvarim sheyesh ben chayin nefesh. Okay. So the Gemara says, in connection with the Braisa that we said that you're allowed to store up during the years before Shemitah to keep a reserve over Shemitah that you can that you and your family can eat and be able to sell. So in fact, Amalei Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina Lepuga Shamei, Rabbi Yosi Ben Chanina told his servant Puga, Puk Otzeli Peri Shalashanim, go out and store for me Peris for 3 years. Erev Shvius or Shvius and Matsoy Shvius, that we're going to use over the 6th, 7th, and 8th years of Shemitah. So therefore, so we see it's not just a theoretical halacha, but in practice, Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina is telling his servant to do that. Whether Shemitah nowadays applies Daraisa or Darabanan, either way, it was going to be necessary. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan, Ein Metzien Peres Me Eretz Yisrael Dvarim Sheyesh Ben Chaya Nefesh. You're not allowed to export from Eretz Yisrael Peres, produce, that is necessary for life. Again, for example, wine or oil or flour, because they need them more badly in Eretz Yisrael. They need them on an ongoing basis in Eretz Yisrael, and you're going to go export them to Chutz La'aretz, and then there's going to be shortages in Eretz Yisrael. They talk about that actually in connection with Poskim talk about this in connection with buying a srogim from Eretz Yisrael. A srogim are not dvarim sheyesh ben chayin nefesh, but maybe you have other issues in exporting them from Eretz Yisrael as well. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda matir b'yayin. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda allows you to do it with wine, b'nei shemayitas atifla. Because the less wine there is, the less foolishness and silliness there is. Tifla means like empty words, and we know that nichnas yayin yotzasoid. When people drink wine, it causes them to say all kinds of things that maybe they shouldn't. So when there's more wine in Eretz Yisrael, there's going to be more of that. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda is saying, you know what? If you can decrease the supply of wine in Eretz Yisrael, so much the better. And the Braisa continues, just like you're not allowed to export Peres from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, kach en metzien me'Eretz Yisrael l'Suria. The same way, you're not allowed to export them from Eretz Yisrael proper to Syria. So Syria, the areas that David HaMelech conquered during his reign outside of Eretz Yisrael proper, it's considered kibush yochid. It's considered that it was a almost like a private conquest, not something that was done in the name of the whole Jewish people. Tosfos discusses we find all over Shas we find different things about Syria. It's sort of like halfway between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. So here we're saying that this is one of those examples that it's where it's like Chutz La'aretz in that regard. The reason being, Tosfos brings from Sifri, the reason is because David conquered it before he conquered all of Eretz Yisrael proper. Had he conquered the entire Eretz Yisrael proper as listed in Parshas Maaseh and then gone on to conquer Syria, then it would have been 100% part of Eretz Yisrael. But because he didn't, and the famous expression, Samach Lepaltin Shel Choloi Kavashta, you didn't even conquer the area near your palace because there were enclaves in Eretz Yisrael that were still occupied by the seven nations of Canaan. So therefore, we had no business conquering Syria yet, and therefore it was without the consent of the Sanhedrin, and therefore it's considered Kibush Yachin. Tosfos also goes on to describe Syria, so nowadays we call it Syria, the language from there we find in various places in Shas, the language that was spoken there is called Sursi, which is a dialect of Aramaic. In English, it's called Syriac for the same reason. So you're not allowed to export Peres from Eretz Yisrael to Syria, because to that extent, we're considering Syria to be like Chutz La'aretz, even though for some other purposes in Halacha, sometimes we consider it to be part of Eretz Yisrael. The Braisa continues, Rebbe Matir, mehifrachia lehifrachia. Rebbe says, I do say that you, or Rebbe is saying, I am Matir, you're allowed to take produce from one hifrachia to the other, meaning a hifrachia is like a particular region or like a particular province in Eretz Yisrael, meaning if you have a province, a hifrachia, on the border of Eretz Yisrael next to Syria, and right next to it, on the other side of the border, is the first hifrachia in Syria, then Rebbe says you would be allowed to export from one to the other because they're close enough. It's one thing if you're going a far distance, but if they're right next to each other, then they're basically in the same economic zone, and even though they're considered la halacha, different countries, Eretz Yisrael versus Syria, therefore that would be mutter. Although Mefarshim learn that Rebbe means in general, this is how the Rashbam explains it. Although Mefarshim explain that it means within Eretz Yisrael itself, it means sometimes you have different kingdoms within Eretz Yisrael itself, you'd be allowed to export, Rebbe is saying, you'd be allowed to export produce from one of those to the other. Okay. Continues the Gemara, Tana Rabbana, we learn in another Braisa, Ein Mistakun be'Eretz Yisrael. Here's another thing, so we've been talking about the dinim of not hoarding produce that has chaya nefesh, and of not exporting produce that has chaya, that's needed for chaya nefesh. So here's another din that applies to specifically to things that are for chaya nefesh, Tana Rabbana, Ein Mistakun be'Eretz Yisrael, b'dvarim she'yesh ben chaya nefesh. In Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to go and try to make a profit by being a middleman with things that are needed for chaya nefesh. Again, wine, flour, for example, wine, oil, and flour. The point being, Rashbam is saying that you can't have that you're going to go and buy from a bunch of different balabatim, and then you're going to go and sell them in the marketplace. Rather, what you do is the balabais himself should be the one to be selling it to the people who need it. Because the idea is you want to keep prices low for the general public. Now, what you could do, that Rashbam goes on, there's no problem, for example, to go and buy wheat and make bread out of it. You're putting in tircha. But here, what you're talking about, you're going to buy the actual flour and resell it as is and get a profit on it. That in Eretz Yisrael, you're not supposed to do. Because again, the idea is we want to keep prices down for people for these basic necessities. So the Gemara brings Omru Olav al Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Yeshay Mistaka B'Yayin V'Shemen. Now, on the other hand, they said about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah that he would make a profit on wine and oil in Eretz Yisrael. So how could he do that? So B'Yayin Sava Lak Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. So as far as wine, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. We just said at the bottom of the previous Amud that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that with wine, there's no problem exporting it from Eretz Yisrael, because Adraba Memayetus Atifli says that way you're reducing the amount of silliness and empty talk there is in Eretz Yisrael, which people do as a result of drinking wine. So therefore, by all means, Rabbi Yehuda, so by the same token, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds like that. So fine, then you want to make a profit on wine, and that way people are less likely to buy it, then fine, goes on to hate. B'shemen, as far as oil, the reason why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would do it, B'astra, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Shriach Mishcha, in his area of Eretz Yisrael, oil was very, very commonly available, and so there wasn't really much of a concern that if he buys and resells, that it's going to cause prices to go up. Okay. The Gemara brings another din, Tana Rabbanan, Ein Mistakrim Pamayim Bebeitzim. You're not allowed to make a profit twice with eggs. Now, why eggs, Dafka? So Rashbam points out, eggs are not so much a matter of chaya nefesh.
Why not?
Because they're not such a basic staple. People need wine, flour, oil, eggs or something. It's nice to have, but it's not something that people need so much for chaya nefesh. But there's also a lot of tircha in it and then very little profit because the eggs very easily break. So like this, you're going to have, the Rashbam describes, you have a poor person goes around to people and buys eggs here and there and then goes and resells them. So therefore, so we learned yesterday that normally you're not allowed to make a profit of more than 1/6. But here, when it comes to eggs, then according to one explanation here in the Gemara, we're saying you're allowed to make even a profit up to 100%, but not more than that. Ein mistakrim pamayim bebeitzim. So that's the Gemara says.
That means more than 100%.
So wait. So Amar Mori bar Mori pligi bar Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel disagree. What we mean by making a profit twice. Chad Omer, Chad Trey. One says it means to make double the amount. So in other words, if he bought a dozen eggs for $5, then he's allowed to sell them for up to, but not including $10. So because then he'd be
if he paid for five, then he's allowed
to sell them for up to ten. That's double. That's what we're saying. So he's allowed to make a profit up to 100%. So he bought them for five. Now he's allowed to sell them for up to another five, but not more than that. So again, the Rashbam says by eggs specifically, the Chachamim are allowing him that break because as it is, eggs are a very low margin thing. As it is, it's a poor person is going around collecting eggs and selling them, and there's problems of breakage and all. Tosfos says that in general, first of all, when there's tircha, you're allowed more than the 1/6%. We're allowed more than the 1/6 profit. Anyway, when we learned yesterday that you're not allowed to profit more than 1/6, that means aside from the tircha and everything you put into it. You're certainly allowed to factor that into your cost of goods and price them accordingly. Especially the Rashbam also continues, not the Rashbam, Tosfos continues, brings from the Rashba, from Reb Shmuel ben Avraham, one of the major Balei HaTosfos, that we're talking about, you're not actually buying them from a market. You're talking about that you yourself have a chicken that lays eggs. So in that case, so by other things, b'chlal, you'd be allowed to make whatever profit you want. You're not obligated, when we said before, to make a profit of not more than 1/6. It means when you're buying and reselling. Here b'chlal, we're not talking about the Tosfos is saying to buy the eggs, but rather we're talking about that you're doing from your own coop's eggs.
If you're not selling them,
so therefore, no, so you are selling them, but that the point is you're not buying them from somebody else. Therefore, according to that opinion, then you're allowed to make a profit of up to 100% on them.
And this is all speaking about the year of
No, this is talking about in general, not just doing Shemitah. Eggs have nothing to do with Shemitah.
But the whole question about...
The whole thing about storing produce applies in general. We said there's an exception. Usually you're not allowed to store produce long term, but in the years before Shemitah, you're allowed to, so you have a reliable supply for your family.
Your own family. And if you go ahead and buying it for someone else and making money for yourself, is there an issue with that?
So that's what we're saying. So you have certain dinim about it. You have to follow the dinim over here because you want, on the one hand, you want to make a living for yourself and your family. On the other hand, you don't want to cause prices to rise for everybody else. So that's why we have all these dinim in the Gemara over here in order to balance out those factors. Okay. So that's one opinion. V'chad omer tagra tagra. The other explanation of ein mistakrin pamayim bebeitzim means you're not allowed to have two middlemen involved. So like this, you might have one middleman who buys a bunch of eggs from the farmers and then goes and sell them to another middleman who then is going to sell them to the customers, and each one is going to want to make his profit. That's going to cause the price to go up too much. Therefore, according to that opinion, you're allowed to have one middleman involved, but not more than that. Rashbam also points out, listen, I mean, if you have with other kinds of goods, you want to have more middlemen involved, and that's going to cause the price to rise, fine, because I'm to hate. Customers will go and find other suppliers. Customers will find other places to buy at where they can buy it more cheaply. But eggs, because there's only so many of them available, then therefore there's more of an issue with that.
That's how it's done, but the wholesale and retail, you can do about that.
That's what we're saying. But when it comes to eggs, we're saying that you're not supposed to do that. Okay. More on this topic of the sale of goods and keeping prices in check. So till now we've been talking about when there's inflation and that can be a problem, and therefore, so we're talking about the steps that we have to take to try to avoid inflation. Now we're going to have the other way around, deflation. Tana Rabbanan, Masriyin HaPragmatia, we're allowed to cry out to Hashem when there's problems with business, va'afilu b'Shabbos, and even on Shabbos, pragmata shahuzla, Agoy Sabach adds, where goods are going down in price too much, even on Shabbos, because in other words, it's gonna destroy the economy. People are not gonna be able to make a living, even nowadays, a moderate amount of inflation is generally considered to be normal. Deflation, they usually try to avoid. You have, for example, like during the Great Depression, there was deflation. People are out of work then. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, we don't just mean anything. To go in klei pishton bebavel, what we mean is the kind of goods, the kind of merchandise that the whole economy in a particular area depends on. For example, linen clothing in Bavel, which was something that a lot of people made their living selling that, and now if the prices go down too much, then they're gonna go out of business. The yayin v'shemen v'Eretz Yisrael, and wine and oil in Eretz Yisrael would be an example of that kind of thing. Amar Rabbi Yosef, who dissolve a koma sota b'shita, we're talking about where prices have gone down so low that what used to cost 10 now costs 6. So therefore, there's been so much deflation that now it's true that Rashbam adds, of course, it's going to be good for the poor people. They can buy things cheaper. But the fact is, it's not really so much. I mean, if the prices remained at normal levels, they'd also generally be able to buy these things. So when they go down so much, it's not really the gain for the poor people is more than offset by the loss to the merchants, where they're going to end up having to close up shop and the whole economy is going to suffer. So therefore, so we're saying that you're allowed to cry and ask Hashem to have rachmanos in such a case, even on Shabbos, when you're not supposed to think about business.
And he asked rachmanos to have rachmanos.
That Hashem should have rachmanos, that prices should stay stable, that in other words, that whatever it is that's causing these prices to go so much down, that there's less of a demand for these things, or there's an oversupply, or whatever it is, that that whatever it takes to fix things up should get fixed up.
If people are starving, I understand why you're allowed to do it on Shabbos, but if just for economy...
That's what we're saying.
Because people want day out. That's
no, but we're saying that it's such an important thing that the economy should be stable that you're allowed to even on Shabbos. Yeah. Yeah. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in another Braisa. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz because you have a mitzvah satluyas ba'aretz. As long as you're in Eretz Yisrael, you have mitzvahs that you can keep. You have mitzvahs that you can keep only there. So you're not just supposed to be. There's actually Rishonim, the Ramban famously holds that there's actually one of the 613 mitzvahs is to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban, when he lists the mitzvahs, doesn't list that. He mentions in Hilchos Melachim the importance of living in Eretz Yisrael, but he doesn't consider it a mitzvah in its own. The Ramban at the end of Sefer HaMitzvahs lists a whole bunch of things that he considers that the Ramban left out of his listing of mitzvahs, and he lists mitzvahs, the mitzvah of conquering and settling Eretz Yisrael, as one of the mitzvahs that's noyigas l'doros. Anyway, so you're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for Chutz La'aretz. Elim kein omder sosayim besela, unless prices have gone so much up that that two saw of wheat are selling for a sela, which would be four times the regular price. Usually, you would have one saw. Yeah, usually you would have two saw go. Usually you'd have two saw going for half a sell. That's twice as much actually. So when prices have gone up that much, and therefore you're having a hard time making a living, and you're having a hard time buying, then you have a valid reason to leave Chutz La'aretz. And the Braisa continues. Amar Reb Shimon Emasai. Reb Shimon says even that. When would that be? When, because of the prices are high and there's shortages, you can't find grain. You can't find grain to buy. But if you're able to find, if there is grain available and just the prices have gone up, I feel I'm the saw seller, lo yetze, even if it's a saw for a seller, which is four times the regular price, lo yetze, then it's still not a valid reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. Tosfos actually wonder as well. Then what's the chiddush? I mean, so if you can't find, if there's nothing available, then it doesn't matter what the prices are. What are you going to do? You know, what is a person going to do? Die of hunger because there's nothing available to buy? What's the difference? What the actual price is? Why is Reb Shimon saying this mancha in a motzel likach? Then you have the rule that only when it goes up twice to twice the normal price, then you're allowed to leave. What if the prices are the same as they were before, but for whatever reason you can't find any to buy? What are you supposed to do then? So that's Tosfos asks the question. The Toras Chaim answers that what the Gemara means, in other words, not that there's nothing available to buy, it just means that there's a tircha to buy it because there's a shortage and therefore it's harder to find. We don't mean that it's impossible to find. So then only when you have it's hard to find and the price is twice what it normally is, then you have a valid reason to leave Eretz Yisrael, but otherwise not.
Not talking about 100 years, talking about
regular situation, and just for whatever reason, there's a shortage. So v'chein hoyer Reb Shimon ben Yochai Omer. In fact, Reb Shimon ben Yochai continued in that vein and said, he was an example of that. Elimelech machlin v'kilyan g'doli ador hoyu. At the beginning of Sefer Rus, you have Elimelech and his family and his sons Machlin and Kilyan, who ended up marrying Nomi, who ended up marrying Orpah and Rus. G'doli ador hoyu. They were great people of the generation. Uparnose ador hoyu. They were leaders and providers for the generation. But why were they punished? And as the Psukim say over there in Megillah Surahs, they all died in Moab over there. And actually, Rashi brings there from a Medrash that first they lost all their wealth. So why were they punished? Because they left Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, says Reb Shimon. So you see that it's not such a simple thing to do that. So Shenemar, now the Pasuk continues, now the Pasuk says, now Marsha says the word Shenemar doesn't really necessarily belong over here. The following Pasuk that the Gemara is going to bring is not necessarily a proof for what we just said. It's just now the Gemara is going to daushin, having mentioned Elimelech, Machlon, and Kilyan, then the Gemara is going to daushin in that connection a Pasuk from Megillas Rus. However, he says maybe the word Shenemar does belong. We're going to say that everybody was saying, look at Naomi, that she left Eretz Yisrael, and look what happened to her. So it does kind of connect with what we said before, because they left Eretz Yisrael, then therefore they were punished.
Why did they have to bring down the names of the people they married?
As they're mentioned in the Psukim.
Right.
But, yeah, yeah.
But what's
not to do, though? Yeah, yeah. So, Shanema, Vatehim Kol Iraleihem, the Pasuk says, when Nomi and Rus came to Eretz Yisrael, came to Beis Lechem, the entire city was surprised about them, was noisy and was torn, and everybody was talking about them. And they said, Hazois Nomi, is this Nomi? Pasha Pshat is, in other words, because she left there a rich woman and now she's coming back poor. But the Gemara says, my hazois Naomi, what's that expression? Omer of Yitzchok, Omru, they were saying chazisem Naomi, the word hazois, we're darshing like chazois with a ches. So they're saying, have you seen Naomi? She yotzes me'eretz l'chutz la'aretz. She left Eretz Yisrael and went to chutz la'aretz, ma'ol salah, and look what happened to her. So in other words, we see, so again, if the Shenemar belongs here in the Gemara, then it's not really a proof. But we're saying, in other words, we see that even the women of Beis Lechem recognize this point, that it's wrong to leave Eretz Yisrael without a valid reason. And therefore, and they're pointing out that, look what happened to Naomi as a result of that.
Well, the valid reason was there was a hunger.
There was a famine, but nevertheless, Elimelech and Machlon and Kilion and the whole family were rich. And therefore, then they shouldn't have been so quick to leave.
They left because they didn't want to be bothered.
Well, so the right. Medrash says, yeah, they left because they didn't want to be bothered. Yeah. Okay. So one point is, Marusha says, since the Pasuk says that Hoim Kolei Ir Aleihem, it says everybody was surprised about them, and then they said Hazois Naomi, so why are they mentioning only Naomi? So therefore, the Gemara Davishens, it means that they're pointing out that Naomi and
only one
Rus is there as well. The point is Aleihem, Rus was there as well, and yet the Pasuk says they continued Hazois Naomi, they're mentioning specifically her, so therefore it means that they're focusing specifically on what she did in leaving Eretz
Yisrael. Yeah, because Rus wasn't in the picture.
Okay, the fact is that the Gemara is darshaning that since the Pasuk phrases it like that, first putting it in the plural and then in the singular, so it means like that. Yeah. So let's talk some more agadta on that topic. On that very day that Ruth came from Moav to Eretz Yisrael, Mesa Ishta Shel Boaz. On that same day, Boaz's wife passed away. And in fact, Rashi brings on the Psukim from a Medrash that in fact the reason why everybody was gathered is because they came for the Levaya. And while they were there, they saw Naomi and Ruth trudging over there, and they were all surprised and Hazois Naomi. So what's the significance of that? Behind the Amri Inchi, like people say, Adla Shochev Shichva, before a person has even passed away, Kaimim Monu Baise, the one who's going to take over his household, has already stood up. In other words, here you have Boaz is going to end up marrying Rus. So here you have the Eibishter had arranged that on the very day that his wife passed away, her successor, Rus, is already in town, has already just come to town, and is prepared eventually to take over when the time comes.
She was an old lady, but anyhow.
We don't know, actually. It doesn't say about Ruth whether she was old. What about Ruth? The Medrash says she was 40.
Not Ruth, but the
Boaz's first wife. Yeah, we don't know.
He was very old.
Well, yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean that his wife was, but yeah. Okay, anyway. So the Gemara continues. Omer Rav Barav Hona Omer Rav. Ivtson ze Boaz. The Shofet Ivtson, who's mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, is identical with Boaz. So the Gemara says, my Kamash Malon, why is that important to know? Ivtson is mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, it's mentioned that he lived in Beis Lechem. Boaz, we also find in Sefer Rus, lived in Beis Lechem. So the Gemara is understanding that it's the same person.
He was the guy, he was the first Goyal?
No, the first Goyal was, he's not named in the Pesukim, although a Medrash says that his name was Toiv. But wait. So the Gemara says, my Kamash Malon, why is that important to know? And the answer is, ki idoch de Rav Bar Rav Huna, because it helps us, it goes together with another statement that Rav Bar Rav Huna made. The Amar Rav Bar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Meya ve'estrim mishtois osa Boaz levono. Boaz made 120 parties for his children. Shenema, because when it talks about the Shofet Ivtson, in Sefer Shoftim, it says, Vayhilo Shloshim Bonim, he had 30 sons, or Shloshim Bonis Shilach HaChotza, and he had 30 daughters who he sent away, meaning that he married them off to men from other families, and said they left his house and moved to where their husbands live, or Shloshim Bonis Hevel Levonim, and he brought in 30 girls to marry his 30 sons. So in other words, altogether, he had 60 kids. And for each one of them, he made a chasana. The pasuk continues, he judged and led the Jewish people for 7 years. And so 60 children, 60 chasanas, for each one of them, he made two parties. One in the father's house and one in the father-in-law's house. So when he's marrying off his son, for example, he has one party in his house and one party in his mechutin's house. Yeah, sheva brachas, whatever. And the same thing for each of the 60 kids. So therefore, there's your 120 parties. Another understanding from a medrash is not so much in his father in law, his father in law's house, but rather that for each one there was a suda for the erusin, for the kiddushin, and another one for the nisuin. Either way, the point is there were 120, and now not one of them did he invite manoyach. Manoyach is Shimshin's father. You have it tells about Ivtsan in Perek Yud Beis of Sefer Shoftim. Right after that, Perek Yud Gimel is the story of Shimshin's birth, and it starts by saying that Manoyach and his wife had not had children, and then a Malach came, etc. So now we're saying so Manoyach was alive at the time, and Ivtsan did not invite Manoyach to even one of these parties. Omar, he says to himself, "Could not kora, but my parali, how would that sterile mule be able to pay me back?" Meaning, in other words, like he's making fun of Manoyach and calling him, he's like a mule that's unable to have children. So why should I bother inviting him to my parties? He'd have no way of paying me back because he doesn't have any children. So he's not going to be making any chasanas. So therefore, so Tana, and we learn in a brisa, the Chulam Mesu B'chayev, all of those 60 children ended up passing away during his lifetime. But then we have afterwards that Boaz married Rus, and they had one son, Ovid, from whom came David HaMelech, and the whole line of Malchus based David. So the point is, by putting these two things together, by understanding that Ivtsan is identical with Boaz, we understand the whole flow of events over here. That Ovid, his child with Rus, was not his first child. In fact, that was his last, after having had 60 children, had been making chasanas and parties and everything for them, and then them all passing away. Then now he had the one last child.
He passed because they all moved out, so?
No, but they were saying that they passed away because it doesn't actually say why, but the implication maybe seems to be because he treated Manoyach that way. Because he treated Manoyach. Now, how could he do that? How could a tzaddik like Ivtsan / Boaz treat Manoyach that way? Yeah, because he can't pay me back and call him a sterile mule. So Marsha explains, in other words, the idea was the minhag in those days was, in fact, when somebody invites you invite somebody to their wedding, it's expected that they're going to reciprocate. Later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about, later in the Gemara, we're going to talk about the whole concept, of Hushvinin, which is basically like a mutual aid society for weddings. And so the idea is that, yeah, Boaz figures that that Manoyach is not going to be able to participate in that. In fact, he's going to be embarrassed, so therefore maybe better not to invite him. If he comes, he's going to feel like he has an obligation to pay Boaz back, and how can he when he doesn't have children? Well, the vote would be, in other words, so Boaz meant well, but on the other hand, he wasn't careful enough to make sure that he does it in a way that doesn't hurt Manoyach's feelings, because the flip side of it is Manoyach is going to think, you know why he's not inviting me? Because he figures, in other words, when he says, when the Gemara has him saying over here, that sterile mule, not that he actually said that, but Manoyach might have perceived that Boaz is thinking of him that way. And therefore we're saying, because of that, he was punished that all these children passed away in his lifetime. But then later on, again, he had Boaz. So v'hainu da'amri inchi, this is like people say the expression, b'chayach the yaldas shisin, even if in your lifetime you've had 60 children, shisin lomalich, what are the 60 going to accomplish for you? Like here, where all of Boaz's 60 children passed away, instead, ichbal, keep on at it, v'olid chad, and have one more child, the mishikin zoriz, who's going to be stronger and faster than the 60. So here we have, like, Boaz, Ivtsan / Boaz had 60 children, but all of them passed away in his lifetime, and nothing came of them. Then he had the one more child with Rus, and from that comes Malchus based David.
They're all totally punished because of their father.
Sometimes you have children are punished because of their father, especially if they're ktanim. They weren't necessarily ktanim, but okay, yeah. I mean, they may have had averus of their own, but the fact is, Ivtsan Schus, their father, the tzaddik, would have protected them had it not been for this. The point being, in other words, again, that you have the one outweighed the 60. Rabbeinu Gershom says, actually, another way of looking at it is eventually Manoyach did have a son, Shimshon, and that one son was stronger and more powerful than all these 60 of Ivtsan. However, Rashbam says, I don't like that explanation, and he says the one over here means Ovid, the grandfather of David. Marsha also adds an interesting point. In the beginning of the expression, you have b'chayach in your lifetime. The end of the expression doesn't mention b'chayach, because we know, in fact, Boaz passed away on that very night. He married Rus. They had relations. She became pregnant with Ovid, and then Boaz passed away. Okay. So therefore, so he didn't even get to see that one more son, but nevertheless, it still came. So, yeah.
The one that came from... The woman that Shimshon married was
nothing Gaya? To do. Shimshon was Megayer, his wives, but that's another matter. We're not dealing with that yet. Okay. Simen Melech Avraham Eser Shonim Sheniftin is Nasi Levado. These are key words from the next few statements that the Gemara is going to say. These are all statements from Rav Chanan Bar Rava. But Omer Rav Chanan Bar Rava, Omer Rav, Eli Melech V'Salmon, Ploni Amoni V'Avinomi, Eli Melech, who we just said left Eretz Yisrael at the beginning of Megillah Suos, and Salmon, who is the father of Boaz, and Ploni Amoni, which is the Goyal, from Sefer Rus, Va'avi Nomi, and Nomi's father, Pulun b'nei Nachshon ben Aminadav Hein. All of them are sons of Nachshon ben Aminadav. So the Gemara says, "My Kamash Malan." What does that come to inform us? It means Shafilu Mishi Yeshlis Chus Avis. Even somebody who has tremendous chus from his ancestors, Eli Melech. So we were saying that Eli Melech's own father was Nachshon ben Aminadav, the great tzaddik. And his wife also, Naomi, was saying that her father is also a descendant of Nachshon. So we're saying, in other words, like they had double yichus and double schusim. Nevertheless, it's still not going to help him when he leaves Eretz Yisrael for Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, we're saying that they lost their wealth and then most of them died. One thing also that tells us is, in Megillas Rus, when Rus tells Boaz, you have to be the Goyal, and he says, there's somebody closer than me, now that fits very well with what we're saying in the Gemara. Boaz is telling her, I'm only a second level relative. Your husband, Machloin, you need me to be the Goyal because your husband was Machloin. Well, the closest relative to him, so that I'm a cousin of his because my father, Salmon, and his father, Elimelech, were brothers. Meanwhile, the Goyal is Elimelech's brother, who the Pasuk calls him Ploni Almoni. He's closer because he's Elimelech's brother and therefore Machlon's uncle. So he's closer, and if he wants to be Goyal, then he'll do that, and if not, then I'll do it instead. The Medrash actually has it a little differently. The Medrash draws the family tree a little differently and has that the Goyal is a first cousin of Machlon, and Boaz is a second cousin or first cousin once removed, whatever. The point is, Boaz is one generation further down.
Machlon is again.
Machlon is one of the boys, one of the two boys of Elimelech, the one who married Rus. Yeah. Okay. So, V'omer of Chonan Bar Rava, Omer Rav, Ime Davram Amaslai Bas Kaunavoy, the mother of Avram Avinu, her name was Amaslai Bas Kaunavoy. Ime de Homon Amaslai Bas Eravti. Homon's mother's name was also Amaslai, but his grandfather's name was Eravti. The Simonach, a way to remember which is which. Tomei, Tomei, Tahar, Tahar. The Tomei has to do with the Tomei, the Tahar with the Tahar. So Kaunavoy, the word Kaur is used in a number of places in Tanakh to mean fat sheep. So therefore, so Avraham's grandfather's name, his maternal grandfather, was named Kaur Nevoi, which is a kosher animal, as opposed to Haman's grandfather's name was Eravti, and Orev is a Tomei bird. So that helps us remember the Tahar Avraham came from the Tahar person and the Tomei from the Tomei. Why is it important for us to know? The Gemara is going to explain in a couple of lines that these kinds of things, to know Avraham Avinu's mother's name, is important to answer minim. Like this, for example, we know the names of the mothers of Yitzchak and Yaakov. So minim are going to ask, well, what's Avraham Avinu's mother's name? How could you not know the mother of the ancestor of your own religion? So we need to know in order to be able to answer them. And having mentioned Avraham, then the Gemara, by the way, mentions Haman because their names are because their mother's names were the same. Their mother's names were both Amaslai. And Rabbi Yitzchak, that his father talks about in a number of places, there's a deeper connection between them in many ways. Haman is the Zelo Umaszeh of Avraham. We see that in the names over here, but we see that in a lot of other ways as well. Avraham had his eights that he had that he entertained his guests under. Haman was hanged on an eight. Avraham had a son Yitzchak, which is Gematria 208. The Gemara tells us in Megillah that Haman had 208 sons, and there's a whole bunch of other connections between them. At the end, after Haman was defeated and killed, 75,000 enemies of the Jewish people were killed, and Avraham Avinu left to go to Eretz Yisrael at Lech Lecha. He was 75 years old, so there's a lot of different connections, Reb Levick points out, between Avraham and Haman, which is another reason why the Gemara brings them together over here. He also points out, by the way, the word Karnavoy is the same Gematria as Orev. So here, Haman's grandfather's name was Eravti, but the primary, the basic form of the word is Orev, and that's actually the same gematria as Karnavoy, so it's literally Zelo Maseh. Okay. Continues Rav Chanan Bar Rava, Ime de David, what about David HaMelech's mother? And again, the point is, we know the names of the mothers of all the other Malchi Yisrael, or almost all the other Malchi Yehuda, rather, so, but we don't know David's from Chumash. So her name was Nitzeves Bas Adoel Shema. What about Ime de Shimshin? What about Shimshin's mother? Tzlelpanis. Her name was Tzlelpanis. Now, you actually have a pasuk in Divrei Yomim that mentions among the families of Yehuda, that mentions a few people, and it says the name of their sister was Hatzlelpani. So in fact, the Rama Forishim who said that's what the Gemara is supposed to have over here instead. The word Hatzlopani, and that was her name. In other words, again, the point is she's such a large figure in that story of the Malach coming and of Shimshon's conception and birth. How you talking? We don't know her name, so the Minim are asking about that. So therefore, we need to know the name. Ben Yehoyada also adds, you know, like this: she was spoken to by a Malach, so people think of her as a kind of Nevi'ah. Well, we know the names of all the other Nevi'ahs. Why don't we know her name? Therefore, it needs to be supplied. The Medrash also tells us the word Hatzlopani itself comes from Tzolol, means a shadow, which represents a Malach, and Pony means turn to, like she was able to turn to the Malach and see him and talk to him.
It's amazing that the word at the minimal here.
Yeah. V'achose Nashon, and Shimshon's sister. Now it never says in the Psukim that he had a sister, but the Chachamim have a Kabbalah that he had, that her name was Nashon. The Pashtos, in other words, up until then they had been barren, they hadn't had children. Once Shimshon was born, then other children followed as well. Yeah. I saw actually somebody wanted to explain, since at the end of the story of Shimshon, after he was killed in the ruins of the Plishti temple over there that he knocked down, the pasuk says his brothers and all of his father's family came and then found his body and buried it. So therefore, so what do you mean? What brothers? What father's family? If he was an only child, therefore the Gemara is understanding that he wasn't an only child and he actually had a sister, and it provides her name. So the Mayan Nafkamina, why is this important to know? The Trivas Aminim, to be able to answer back Minim, they're going to say, Hayitochen, you don't know these names. The Rimi Gash actually points out an interesting angle on it as well. He says, so the Minim, after all, don't believe in Torah Shabbal Peh. So they're going to ask for such things. We're going to tell them, we're going to say, listen, now you see, our Torah Shabbal Peh tells us these details, which you, who believe only in Torah Shabbal Chsav, would have no way of knowing. Therefore, you should realize there's a whole lot else in Torah Shabbal Peh that you need in order to understand Torah Shabbal Chsav, and that may induce them to tack a belief in it. Okay. Avram Avinu was in jail for 10 years. Who put him in jail? Rashbam brings two explanations. One is that Nimrod did, and the other one is that Terach did. As we know, famously, Avraham broke Terach's idols. So according to that second opinion, Terach himself threw Avraham in jail for many years because of that. Anyway, Sholosh b'Kusa v'Sheva b'Kaudu. For 3 years, he was jailed in the city of Kusa, and then for another 7 years in the area of Kaudu, which is in the area of Hore Ararat, and then in Armenia, more or less Armenia of nowadays. Says the other way around, 3, 7 in Kusa and 3 in Kaudu. Either way, it was 10 years. Marsham makes the point. Avram Avinu first discovered Hashem at age 3, as we know. Now, even Nimrod or even Terach weren't going to have him executed at 3, or a little kid at 3 years old. So they figured they're going to have to wait till he's 13, till he's a gadol. So therefore, so meanwhile, in the 10 years, then he was in jail. The point of it to know, in other words, Rashbam says, the point is to tell us how dear and precious Avram Avinu is, how much Mesiras Nefesh he went through even at such a young age. And Omer of Chista, Ibra Ze'ira de Kusa, sort of Chista says specifically, the small Ibra, that's the name of an area in the city of Kusa, Zehu Ur Kastim, that is Ur Kastim, where Avraham Avinu was actually thrown into the furnace. The point being, Rav Chista is saying, if you visit that place, and in his times it was a known place, then you make the bracha over there, Baruch Sha'os and Nisim La'Vesenu B'Mokam Azeh, because now when you come there, then you know that's the place where Avraham Avinu was thrown into the furnace and saved from it. Continues the Gemara. V'omer Rav Chanan bar Rava Amar Rav. Another statement from Rav Chanan bar Rava. Oysa yom shenifta Avram Avinu min ha'olam. On the day that Avram Avinu passed away, omdukol g'dayla umas ha'olam b'shura. All the great people, all the leaders of the Goyish nations were standing in a row, as they do by Nichol Mavelim, v'omru, and they were saying, oylo la'olam sh'ovan manhigoy, woe to the world that has lost its leader, the oil of the sphina shavad kabarnita, and woe to the ship that's lost its pilot, its driver, the helmsman, the one who decides where the ship should go. In other words, Avraham Avinu was the one who taught everybody where to go and what to do, and now he's gone. Maharsha explains there were two things about Avraham Avinu. He was great in seichel and he was great in midis. So he was teaching them. He's teaching them about that Hashem exists, and he's also teaching them midas tovus. So therefore, so now all the leaders of the nations recognize that, and that's why they're using this double expression about Avraham Avinu. Continues the Gemara. Here is another drasha from Rav Chanan bar Rava. The pasuk says, "Vamisnase v'chol l'roish." We say it every day in davening, and Vayivarach David. The elevation for all heads. So what does that mean? L'cho Hashem amalacha v'amisnase v'chol l'roish. Amar Rav Chanan bar Rava. Amar Rav afilu reish gargusa. It means that even somebody who is in charge of deciding who's going to water their fields when, Mishmaya Moikmila is appointed Minashamayim. In other words, that's like the least important official. There needs to be an official when you have a bunch of fields that are all getting their water from the same well or the same channel or whatever. You need somebody in charge of putting up a schedule, who's going to have their turn when. So it's like the least important of any possible official, even such a lowly official. Hashem himself is personally involved, so to speak, in Ashgacha Pratis, in making sure. In other words, Vamisnase, even the smallest amount of nesius, of elevation of one person over another, is done specifically by Hashem. You shouldn't just think that's random. The point being, in other words, that you shouldn't think that Hashem only controls like big things in the world, even the smallest things. In fact, Maharsha brings something from this week's parasha in that connection. You have your leaders of your shvatim, etc., all the way down to choytev etzecha and shoyev memecha. So the Gemara is hinting at that point. Even your choytev etzecha and your shoyev memecha, the leaders of that of those kinds of work gangs, is also minashamayim. Okay. So here these were a bunch of statements from Rav Chanan bar Rava. Amar Rav, the first one of them had to do with what we were saying about Elimelech and that whole thing, which is why the Gemara brought that in and then brought in the rest of his statements. So now going back to Elimelech and Machlon and Kilian, when they left Eretz Yisrael, and we were saying on Amud Aleph that Rav Shimon ben Yochai was saying that's why they were punished in losing their wealth and then passing away in Moav. But the Gemara says no. Amar Rav Chiya bar Oven, Amar Rav Yishuv ben Korcha, Chas v'shalom to say that about them, that if they had, that they were punished for leaving Eretz Yisrael. The fact is, Shafilu Motsu Subin Lo Yotsu, they wouldn't have left Eretz Yisrael even if all they could find was bran available to eat. So they didn't leave because of the famine, because they didn't leave, in other words, Chira Ba'oven is saying, they didn't leave when they still had an alternative and that therefore they should be punished. There really was no alternative because there's no food to be had. Why were they punished? They were tzaddikim. They should have davened for Rachmanus, for the generation, that Hashem should make the famine stop. And they didn't, and instead they left Eretz Yisrael. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Bezakech, and you're crying out, Yatziluch kibbutzayich, you will be saved with your gathering. Meaning, in other words, you're going to cry out and gather Jews together to daven. Then that will cause a salvation. And here, instead of gathering Jews together to daven for the end of the famine, instead they left Eretz Yisrael. Sort of Chiya bar Oven saying that's why they were punished. And yeah, the Medrash has a different take on it, that Elimelech was stingy. He didn't. We figured poor people are going to come and demand food and money, and I don't want to. And therefore, we left Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara is not bringing that over here, but yeah. Okay. The Gemara continues, getting back to the dinim that we were saying on Amud Aleph. Now, again, we said that you can't leave Eretz Yisrael, we said, unless prices have gone up twice as much as they usually are. Unless, we said, if einim motza likach, if you can't find what to buy, then we said that's when einim motza likach, that's when it's hard to find, and when you find that it's twice the price. But if motza likach, then we said that even if prices are four times as high as usual, then you shouldn't leave. So now the Gemara continues. That would only apply when money is cheap. In other words, it's money is available and the fruit, the produce is more expensive. In other words, there's inflation. But if money is hard to come by because the economy has collapsed and people don't have money, even if four sa is going for a sella, which is half the usual price, yotzin, then that's a valid reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. Because if you can't earn money, you're not going to have any way of buying that produce. What good is it going to do when there's plentiful produce if you don't have any money to buy it? Again, like during the Great Depression, for example, prices were low, and at times at least food was plentiful, but nobody was able to earn any money. So Rav Baba Chana is saying that would be a valid reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara brings in this connection. The Gemara is going to bring an example that Rabbi Yochanan says about that. But first, the Simon, Sela, Poyo, Choruva, Talya, Omrin. These are statements of Rabbi Yochanan, the first of which is going to relate to this point. And then, meanwhile, Rabbi Yochanan is going to mention several other ones as well. Do Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Nehirna. Rabbi Yochanan says, I remember. Now, Rabbi Yochanan lived a very long life. There's actually places where it's said, it's brought in Seder Adoris, I don't remember what his source is, that Rabbi Yochanan lived 400 years. That seems to be maybe a guzma, but he definitely lived a very long life. Some say that maybe what it was is somebody wrote tof standing for tamnin, which means 80, and then somebody misread and misunderstood that the tof means 400. The Reb Shuda Goin tells us that Rabbi Yochanan was Rosh Hashiva in Eretz Yisrael for 80 years. Yes, I mean that the 80 is really supposed to be 60, but in any case, he lived a very long life. It seems there's evidence that he lived to be well over 100 years old.
Then he was saying why he was what? Does Gemara bring down why he was
Zechatet? No, not specifically that I know of. But in any case, the point is, he lived a long life, so he's able to reminisce and remember in his old age of how things were many, many decades earlier. So Nehirne, he says, I remember, Kadhavo Kaiman, Arba Sin Basela. There was a time when wheat was going for 4 saw to the sella, which again is half the usual price. And yet there were many people who were swollen with hunger in Tveria, midless Iser, because there weren't even any Iser and there wasn't any money available. There wasn't any money because people were out of work. So in other words, the point is that bears out what Rav Baba Chana is saying. You may have, there's plenty of food available, but if nobody can afford to buy it, what good does that do? People are still going hungry, so therefore that would be a valid reason to go and move someplace else where you could earn a living. With that said, you have other medrashim that bear on that say that even then it's best not to do that if you don't have to. The medrash tells a story of a kohen one time who's in that situation. He's not able to make ends meet in Eretz Yisrael, so he's thinking to leave the chutzlar. This kohen was an expert in the dinim of tzaras. People would come to him to have their tzaras checked out. So before he leaves, he tells his wife, let me tell you the basics so that you'll be able to at least refer people to the appropriate chachamim. And he starts teaching her that, for one thing, every individual hair on the body has its own follicle that provides it nourishment and that makes it grow, and therefore, so when you see when the hair turns white because of tzaras, it means that the tzaras is getting very deeply into the skin, and that's why white hair is a symptom of tzaras. So she says, wait a minute, you're telling me the Eibishter makes for every individual hair makes a source of sustenance for that hair? You're a whole person. You don't think the Eibishter can provide you a source of sustenance here in Eretz Yisrael? And he listens to her and stays, and soon enough, Taka, things improved for him. So, yeah. Anyway, so now, again, having mentioned one of Rabbi Yochanan's reminiscences, then the reminiscences, then the Gemara brings some other ones. I remember when workers would refuse to hire themselves out for work on the east side of the city, because they would die from the smell of the bread. When they're working east of the city, the west wind, which is a very strong wind, as mentioned earlier in the Masechta, would blow towards them and bring the smell of bread from the city, and it smelled so good they were overpowered by the smell. Either because just it was unusually good, or because it was a time of famine and they couldn't afford the bread, and therefore, yeah. I remember, continues Rabbi Yochanan, when a child would break open a carob, and usually carobs are very dry, but have a nugget chut de dovshal trained ra'ohi, a stream of a thread of honey, of sap, of juice from the carob would drip out onto his two arms. In other words, in Rabbi Yochanan's youth, the Eretz Yisrael had such bracha in it that even the carobs, which are usually a very dry fruit, would be lush and full of it. And full of juice like that. For Amr Abelazar, and Rabbi Lazar says in that connection, similarly, Nehuna Kadav Anotel Urva Bisra. I remember when a raven would pick up a piece of meat, because ravens are scavenging birds, and so they would take meat when they find it. And the meat was so fatty that there would be a trail. Of fat running from the meat all the way down the side of the wall. So the bird would be taking the meat and flying above the wall to go out of the city, and you'd see like a stream of fat, a trail of fat with the meat left behind because it was so fat and juicy. The Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yechanan says, here's another thing I remember from my youth. Nehuna kadhamu Thailand talya v'tal yosef b'shuka. I remember when young men and women would play in the street, kvar shit estrei, kvar shev estrei, at age 16 or 17 years old, v'lo havu choton, and they wouldn't come to sin. in later times, you can't do that. You know, there's too much concern that there's going to be pritzus between them. But Rabbi Yochanan is saying, when I was young, I remember that they were much more tahor in their speech and in their thoughts and actions, and nothing wrong would happen. 18 already not. 18 has already been shmona esrei the chuppah, but 16 and 17, they're not of the age of that yet. These things, by the way, Mefarshim say, they go together. Because they had that tara, therefore the fruits were juicier back in Rabbi Yochanan's times. When they fell from that level, then also the fruits started drying up. The Amr Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan says another thing that I remember from when I was younger. Nehuna kad havu amin be medrash. I remember they used to say in the Beis Medrash, demodi lohoin of a yid who admits and agrees with the goyim and like tries to kowtow to them and curry favor with them, nofably dehoin, he's going to wind up falling into their hands. So in other words, anything that they're saying, a yid should go and contradict it and not believe in any of it. And a yid who trusts in them, delay what's his, dilhoin ends up becoming theirs because he trusts them too much. And they wind up therefore finding out all of his things and taking away his money from him. So in other words, the point is, a yid has to have bitochen in the Eibishter, the Chovas HaLevavos, make the big thing of that. He starts Shara Bitochen by saying, he gives a long explanation over there. A person trusts in anything other than Hashem, he's going to find out he's disappointed. And this is one example of it, Rabbi Yochanan is saying. You know, think powerful goyim, they can help me out, but it turns out that it's going to be counterproductive. Maushal gives a long explanation over here that relates it. We have the psukim. We have psukim that express that point. We have the idea that the Gemara mentions in Sota that a person chanfers a rosha and flatters him and says you're doing fine. He's going to end up falling into their hands. You have the psukim orer agever asheivtach ba'adam and baruch Hashem baruch agever asheivtach ba'Hashem. So it expresses this idea. Okay. Getting back now to Machlon and Kilian from Megillas Rus, Ksiv Machlon and Kilian, and Megillas Rus, those two are introduced as Machlon and Kilian. Uchtiv, late in Divrei Yomim, there's a pasuk which the Gemara is going to bring more fully further down, which calls them Yoyash v'Sarof. So what were their real names, Machlon and Kilian, or Yoyash and Sarof? So the Gemara says Rav Shmuel. So Rav and Shmuel argue on that. Chadam and Machlon b'Kilian Shmon. One says their real names were Machlon and Kilian. V'lama nikma Shmon. Sarah for Yoyash. Yoyash for Sarah. V'Sarash. Those are not their real names. Those are names of drushes. In general, in Divrei Yomim, the beginning of Divrei Yomim has many family trees of different families among the Jewish people. And the Medrash explains that everything in those psukim is meant for drushes. It's not necessarily literally the psukim are not meant over there. Usually throughout Kol HaTorah Kula, usually in Mikra Yetz Midei Pshute, but in Divrei Yomim, the psukim are there for drushes. So here, one of these opinions is saying that the names they're given in Divrei Yomim, Yoyash and Sarof, are meant for a drusha to tell us something about them. So, Yoyash and Siyashu min HaGeula. One of them is called Yoyash because they gave up on the Geula, because here they should have had Bitochen and Hashem that he's going to save them from the famine, and instead they left Eretz Yisrael. Sarof Shnischai was Sreif Alamokim, and they're called Sarof because they earned themselves to be burnt by Hashem as punishment for that avera of leaving Eretz Yisrael. Marsha adds another point as well. Nisyashim in Agula. First of all, the pasuk said they lived in Moya for 10 years, and in that sense, like they gave up already by then. By now, the famine is long since over, and still they gave up on living in Eretz Yisrael. And also that they should have, again, we said before, they should have davened for rachmim for the dur. So therefore, instead, like this, they should have. They daven with a fire, and instead, therefore, they deserve, because they didn't, then they deserve to be burnt in fire by Hashem. That's one explanation. V'chad Omer, the other explanation is Yoyash v'Sarof Shmon. The real names are Yoyash and Sarof. V'lam v'nikroshon Machlon v'Kilian. Machlon is called that Shinasha, also Gufan Chulin. They made their bodies Chulin. They made their bodies, they went to Chutz Laaretz, which is a Talmudical land. That's according to Rashbam. Marsha also says they married Goitus, which also they made their bodies chulin. They desecrated their bodies by marrying Goitus. This is b'chal a big machlokas, whether they converted, whether Orpah and Rus had been Megayer before they married Machlon. According to Marsha, they hadn't. There's a big machlokas about that. So therefore, that's Machlon. The Kilian, Shneschai, were Kloyel Amokim, and they're called Kilian because they deserve to be wiped out by Hashem. Kilian, the complete destruction. There's an explanation also that's brought that Machlon, and at least Machlon, was married to Rus, and eventually through the Goyal, and he had a tikkun. So therefore, Machlon is Moloshin, like Hashem was moichel him for that, as opposed to Kilian was completely gone because Orpah ended up becoming a Rashanta, and so nothing was left of him.
Goyas
and his brothers came from her. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tanya commander Amar Machlon v'Kilian Shmon. We learn a Braisa that agrees with the opinion that their real names were Machlon and Kilian. To Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, my dichtiv, the full pasuk in Divrei Hayomim goes as follows. The Yoikim, the Anshei Chozeva, the Yoyash v'Sorav HaShabol l'moyav v'Yashuv Ilochim, v'Advorim Atikim. So the simple meaning of the pasuk, the surface meaning of the pasuk, is that it's listing various people from Shevet Yehuda. Yoikim, the people of Chozeva, which is the name of a city, Yoyash and Saraf, who ruled over Moya, Baalu would mean like they ruled over, V'Yashuv Ilochim, and Yashuv Ilochim is another person from the Shevet, v'Advorim Atikim, and these matters are ancient. So the Gemara darshins, though, phrase by phrase, what this pasuk means. The Yoikim, the Yeshua, Shehekim Shvul Ansha given. Yoikim is hinting at Yeshua, who upheld the Shvua to the people of Given. Now, Marsha points out, Yeshua and a number of the other people that we're going to mention are not actually from Shevet Yehuda. What are they doing in this listing, which is supposed to be about people from Shevet Yehuda? So Marsha explains at some length over here that what it means is, we're talking about, these are all people who joined the Shechinah. These are all people who joined or caused other people to join the Shechinah, to join the Jewish people. So Yeshua is called that in token of the fact that he brought it about that the Givonim remained part of the Jewish people, that he upheld the Shvua, like this, when the Givonim tricked the Jewish people into accepting them, and then afterwards they found out that these are actually Knanim, and everybody wanted to kill them, and Yeshua and the others, Kanim, say that, no, we can't, because we did make a Shvua to them, and therefore, so they upheld it and kept the Givonim alive, so he brought about that they came on Tachas Kanfei Ashrina. Therefore, he's mentioned in this passage. So that's Yoikim. The Anshe Chozeva, when it says the people of Chozeva, Elo Anshe Given, that means the Givonim themselves, Shekizvu be Yeshua, where they lied to Yeshua and claimed that they're from a faraway country. But then, on the other hand, we have the contrast, V'yoyash v'sarof, Elo Machlon v'kilyan, V'lomen v'kashmon yoyash v'sarof. So like we said, Yoyash v'nisyashim in a ge'ula, one's called Yoyash because they gave up hope of the ge'ula, Sarof v'nischai v'sreif alamokim, and they're called Sarof because they deserve to be burnt by Hashem. The point being, in other words, again, so here we have the contrast. Here we have Yoikim v'Anshe Chozeva, who worked to come closer to Hashem. And then on the other hand, we have Machlon and Kilian, who left Hashem and went to Moav and married Goytis. So therefore the Pasuk is pointing out the contrast between them. But again, the Braisa is saying their real names were Machlon and Kilian, agreeing with the first opinion that we said, that Yoyash and Sarov are nicknames for them because of what they did. The Pasuk continues, Asher Baalu L'Moyav, when it says that they Baalu Moyav. Now, the simple meaning of Baalu would be that they ruled over Moyav, but Baalu means husbands, so they became husbands of Moyav. Shenosu Nosha Moyav, they married women from Moyav. The Yashuvi Lochem, when the pasuk continues, Yashuvi Lochem, Rus HaMoyavia, Sheshava, this refers to Rus HaMoyavia, who returned to Eretz Yisrael, V'nidbaka B'Beis Lechem Yehuda, and she became connected to Beis Lechem Yehuda by becoming a Giyordas and marrying Boyaz. And when the pasuk finishes off, V'hadvorim Atikim, when the pasuk continues, these matters are ancient. That means Dvorim Halolu Atik Yemaya Amorim. Means this whole thing was orchestrated by the Ancient of Days, by Hashem. Hashem made all of this happen. That Machlon and Kilian would die there in Moav, and that Rus would come back to Eretz Yisrael in order for Malchus Beis David to be established. Shendichdiv, as in fact, we find another point of that. The pasuk says Matsosi David Avdin. Hashem says, "I found my servant David." Uchdiv Shtei Bnei Secha Hanim Tzoyis. We find the Malachim tell Lot right before Sodom is destroyed. They tell him, "Take your two daughters Hanim Tzoyis and get out of the city." The point of Hanim Tzoyis, in other words, they were found in Sodom. Hashem had to, like at the last moment before Sodom is going to be destroyed, Hashem schlepped them out of there in order that hundreds of years later, David is going to come to eventually from one of those daughters is going to come the nation of Moav, and from them is going to come Rus, and from them is going to come David. So Hashem was putting everything in place for hundreds of years before that to make everything happen. So that's Vadvarim Atikim. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and the Gemara is going to douse in the next pasuk after that in Divrei Hayomim, having douse in this pasuk with Yoikim Ba'anshe Chozeva. The Gemara is going to continue by douse in the next pasuk, but we'll learn that, and also referring to Malchus Beis David, but we'll talk about that tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
Go ahead.